My name is Christian Hughes, and I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Christian.
My sobriety date is March 1st, 2012. My home group is Indian River 12-Step Study. We meet at Emmanuel Episcopal Church on Mondays at 7 o'clock over in Virginia Beach. I have a service position there. I am the intergroup service rep, and I have a sponsor who knows that I am his sponsee, and he has a sponsor who also knows that he is his sponsee. I say that because it's important for me to know that I didn't always have a sponsor that way. Now, when I first came into the program, I did do what I was supposed to do. I got a sponsor, I worked the steps, and then I rested on my laurels for a little while, and I'll get into that later on. And then I kind of sponsored myself for a few years. Luckily, I didn't wind up going back out, but I was a dry drunk for a few years, and so now I am getting back into it. So it's been a little while since I've done this. What happened, what it's like now. I grew up in California, in the Sierra Nevada Mountains, a family of five in total, two sisters and myself. I was the oldest brother. My parents and my entire family were Christian. We went to church, and it's one of those ones where, they laid hands on you, and then you kind of did one of those things, and, and I never really I wasn't really sure if it was something that was really real at the time, or if I just kind of went down because everybody else was going down. So, I went along with everything that was kind of going on there. And, I'd go to Christian school, and then everybody that I knew going to school, went to the same church, they'd wind up, and I'd get picked on by those same people. And the actions of those people, I'm just kind of never really were kind of the same actions that you expected from somebody that was, kind of in a church kind of a deal. So it kind of turned me off from God at the time, just because it was not really what I wanted to do, was to be around people that kind of treated me that way. I remember growing up, I think my dad gave me, a couple sips of, whatever it was that he was drinking, just to, hey, yeah, here you go, try this. And it wasn't really anything at that point in time to me. I got my first real job where I was having to pay taxes when I was 16 years old, working at a grocery store. And the guys that I was hanging out with in the grocery store, we'd have to stock the coolers. And the owner of the store had said, "Well, if you guys are thirsty, you guys can go ahead and grab yourself soda. No big deal." And we kind of took our liberties with that as far as, how many sodas we drank. And one day kind of want a soda, kind of want to try something a little bit different. And thought, let me try an O'Doul's that doesn't have any alcohol in it so I can drive home without a problem. So I grabbed a couple of O'Doul's and I shoved them underneath my apron. And I drank them after I got out of work. And I was like, I kind of liked the taste of that. And there was no real effect with any of that because there was no alcohol in it except for like a very tiny minute amount. But if I want to grab something like that, I might as well grab something that actually has alcohol in it and see what that's like. So the next day I remember going to work and grabbing a couple of beers and putting them underneath my apron, left at the end of the day, and got in my car and drank them on my way home. And I immediately loved the way that I felt. I didn't feel kind of stressed out anymore. I kind of felt relaxed. I was like, all right, well, this is, kind of a great feeling. I'm kind of enjoy this. And the guys that I was working with were kind of doing the same thing. So I made good friends with them. And, we'd all kind of grab our beers and, we'd be, okay, where are we partying? Okay, we need beer. Okay, we'll go grab a case, go throw it out back, pick it up after work. So, the actions that I did at the time, were not real great. That would be stealing beer at work, drinking at work, being drunk, and, just kind of worried that I was going to get caught, kind of didn't care that I was going to get caught if I got caught. By the grace of God, I never got arrested for that. I'd go and I'd party with those guys and I'd drink alcoholically at that age, and I didn't even have an idea that I might have been an alcoholic at that point in time. Figures down the road, I was about 19, And was kind of trying to date a girl that didn't really want to date me very well, and she was the one that I lost my virginity to, and you know, kind of, you know, being an alcoholic the way that I am, you know, I kind of take everything personal, and I kind of, you know, got real drunk and didn't like the idea that she didn't want me, and thought, oh, let me geographically change my location here because I don't want to be in this town anymore. So I joined the Air Force. Went to basic training. I was in the MEPS station September 11th of 2001 when the attacks happened, waiting to leave and go to basic training. Everything kind of got slowed down for those couple of days there while we were waiting, and then went off to basic on the 14th of September. And then, the entire time that I was in basic training, I really didn't have any thought of drinking. Everything else was kind of, you know, focused on the military, focused on what it was that I was supposed to be doing at that point in time. Got out of basic training, went to tech school. People were partying, you know, that were of age to party. And at the time, I thought, well, you know, yeah, I'd love to take a drink, but I'm not going to, you know, get in trouble right now either because I don't want to get kicked out of the Air Force. And I haven't even gotten to my first real duty station. So I made it through tech school. And got to Langley Air Force Base as my first duty station. And one of the first things that I did was I made friends with people in the dorms that could drink. Because, well, dang it, now that I'm not, you know, under so much scrutiny, I want to be able to have that feeling again. Because I loved the way that I felt when I drank. And so I'd party with them and went to a party and met my first wife at the party. And you know, I was drunk. Didn't really remember much about the party other than the fact that this girl had come over and talked to me. And so I made it kind of a point to go hunt her down like the next day. And I kind of took my first hostage. You know, and we kind of, you know, we wound up getting together, got married, and had two kids together. Wound up going to Germany on a 4-year tour to there. The entire time that I was in Germany, I did not wind up really getting to go around Europe and getting to experience anything the way that you know, a lot of people might do when they go overseas. I found myself drinking dang near every night when I was over there in Germany. I've been on a few deployments, 3 times to Iraq. Whenever I was in Iraq, you really can't drink, but that didn't stop me from trying to find something that would help me alter the way that I felt. So I'd go find bottles of NyQuil, and I'd drink NyQuil because that could get me to the point where I could kind of fall asleep and not have to deal with, you know, the fact that there's mortars and rockets going off. Didn't have to deal with the fact that I was away from my family. Bottom line, no matter what I did, I was always looking for something to fill that hole and to try to keep me from feeling the way that I felt because I didn't like to feel what I was feeling. Came back from Germany, and for about, let's see, I got back in 2009 to the States, and from 2009 until 2012, it just kept getting worse and worse and worse. I never wound up in a rehab by the grace of God. Never got drug in by the commander and talked to about my drinking. Had I kept going, it would have wound up being there. I ultimately wound up having to go to the ADAP program. Ironically enough, it was 2 years after I had gotten sober because my security clearance was coming up for a renewal. And they didn't know who I was, what I was about at all, so I had to go and I had to go through all the questions and, okay, you're fine, you're cleared, you know, we'll let you go ahead and get your clearance back. In February of 2012, my ex-wife decided that she had had enough of my behaviors. And she packed up the kids in her car and left me on the 29th of February, actually it was probably about the 14th of February, 14th, 15th of February. She decided she was done and had enough. So she packed up and drove up to her mom's house in the Colonial Heights area. And then I kind of still hadn't even come to my senses at that point in time. But, you know, I wanted to see my kids, and so I was willing to try to do, you know, what I could, you know, to go make sure that I could see them. But the thought that I might have a problem with drinking still hadn't crossed my mind at that point in time. On the 29th of February, I drove up, saw my kids, and I was talking with my wife, and she just casually in the middle of the conversation just slipped it in to say, you know, you might, you know, when you get a chance, you know, maybe look up what a highly functioning alcoholic is. And then she just left it at that. She didn't say anything else about that. She just kind of kept moving on and with the rest of the conversation. You know, and today I know that there's no such thing. You know, all I was doing was just drinking to survive because I couldn't do anything else. I didn't know anything else. I didn't have a clue what else to do other than to drink every time that I got home. So I drove back from Colonial Heights and got back to the house, you know, about a 2-hour drive or so. And I thought, well, you know, it was a long drive. It's been a long day. I'm on PTO right now, so let me go ahead and have a couple of beers because I don't have to worry about going anywhere. Might as well, right? It makes sense to me. Let's just relax from the drive. So I had a couple beers, and then those couple beers turned into a couple beers and some more beers and some tall glasses of rum and coke, and I don't know how many of those that I was in at the point in time when I thought, well, you know, let me look up what it is that she was talking about. And so I did some searching, and I came across AA's, you know, AA's website. And I'm going to read these questions because these are the questions that I read when I realized that I was an alcoholic. So one, have you ever decided to stop drinking for a week or so, but only lasted for a couple of days? Two, do you wish people would mind their own business about your drinking and stop telling you what to do? Three, have you ever switched from one kind of drink to another in the hope that this would keep you from getting drunk? Four, have you had an eye-opener upon awakening during the past year? Five, do you envy people who can drink without getting into trouble? Six, have you had problems connected with drinking during the past year? Seven, has your drinking caused trouble at home? Eight, do you ever try to get extra drinks at a party because you do not get enough? Nine, do you tell yourself you can stop drinking anytime you want to, even though you keep getting drunk when you don't mean to? 10, have you missed days of work or school because of drinking? 11, do you have blackouts? 12, have you ever felt your life would be better if you did not drink? I read those questions, it hit me like a ton of bricks that I had a problem. And I broke down in tears. I didn't know what to do. I just knew that at that point in time, for lack of a better word, I was pretty well screwed. I was without a family, and I had no solution to a problem that I just suddenly came to a realization that I had. So I went and I dumped out everything that I had in the house because, well, if I realize that I'm an alcoholic, it's not going to help me to, you know, keep drinking anything. And then I pulled out a phone book back when there was, you know, kind of phone books readily available. And I looked up the AA phone number in the area. Called the phone number, and I just wanted to know where a meeting was the next day. And this was probably about, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning or so. And the guy that answered the phone said, call me back tomorrow when you're not drunk. I'll tell you where I'm meeting is. And of course I got mad, you know, because I'm an alcoholic, and why won't you help me? I just came to this realization, I need help, and you're just telling me, go away. So I got online and I looked, and I'm like, I'm going to find a meeting, and it's going to happen tomorrow. I've made up my mind, and I'm done. So I looked up where the meetings were and went to a 12 o'clock meeting in the afternoon time on the 1st of March 2012 and picked up a white chip. And there was a guy there who told me I didn't have to quit drinking forever, that all I had to do was, you know, just don't drink today. And that made a world of sense to me at that point in time because I didn't know any possible way that I could quit drinking forever, because I had tried to quit drinking before, and I'd made it, you know, maybe a month, maybe a month and a half, tops, before the thought of, well, you know, one or two beers is not going to hurt. Next thing you know, right back at it. So that made a lot of sense to me, and they told me, you know, get a sponsor, get a home group, work the steps. You know, keep going to meetings. So I got a kept going to meetings, and I kept hearing the same thing: get a sponsor, get a home group, work the steps. So that was, I want to say it was a Wednesday. By the Saturday coming up, I'd gone up to go visit my kids again, and told my wife, you know, look, I'm trying to make a change. I realize that I'm an alcoholic. I've got problems that I'm trying to work out. So she was, you know, at least open to the fact that I was trying to make a change in my life, and, you know, so, okay, well, we'll see how things go. So the following Sunday, you know, I went to a meeting, and, you know, and they said, anybody who can be a temporary sponsor, you know, please raise your hand. And people raised their hand. And I'd been listening at that point in time, you know, trying to find somebody that, you know, could possibly help me. And there was a guy that had raised his hand, you know, he could be a temporary sponsor. So I asked him after the meeting if he could be a temporary sponsor, or at least be my sponsor. And he said, no, I can't right now. I got too many sponsees, but here, I got this sponsee right here who was in need of a sponsee. So that's how I wound up with my first sponsor. He and I went and we got into the book, and we read through everything together. I knew that I was powerless, and when I came into the rooms, that I was just defeated. I knew that there was nothing that I could do except for, you know, kind of give up and surrender. Ironically enough, you know, I kind of turned back to the God that I kind of walked away from for a long time. When I was drinking, I was trying to find something that made sense to me, and nothing made sense. You know, I was looking at all the different types of religions and everything, and I wound up going back to the God that I grew up with, just because of the fact that that was what I knew. I knew that when I prayed, when I was up there visiting my kids and surrendered, that when my sponsor and I had gotten to the point where we were working on, you know, through the third step, that the words that they say are optional had already been said in just a different way, just in a different manner. So I knew that I had surrendered completely, and I went through and worked the fourth step with that sponsor. And, you know, I got in the home group, and I was, you know, opening up at the home group. And things were going good for a little while. My wife had come back, and my family was back together, and things were getting better. My boss in the Air Force, he knew that, you know, and I told him, you know, look, I'm an alcoholic. I need you to know what I'm dealing with here. And he even had looked at me and said, well, you know, I kind of had an idea, but there wasn't anything that, you know, had given me any indication, you know, there was nothing I could act on. So I got a lot of support from everybody around me, and the fact that I was, you know, trying to make a change in my life. And, you know, life got good when I was working the steps. When I was trying to make things right, and trying to make, you know, that living amends, you know, by doing the right thing, and then just continuing to do the next right thing. Things went good for probably about a year, year and a half. And then my wife decided that she just didn't want to do it anymore. Enough damage had been done in the past. And she decided that she wanted to move on. So she packed up the kids and left. And I just remember sitting there and going, what the heck? Yeah, this was not part of the plan at all. This was not supposed to be what happens when your family comes back, when you're, You know, when you everything you get sober, you'd start doing the right thing, and then your family's gone. What happened here? And I remember talking to my sponsor and trying to figure it out. And it's like, there's nothing you can do about it. You know, just pray. Just keep praying for her, pray for the kids, and just try to do the next right thing, because that's all that you can do at the time. So I, spent a little while trying to figure out what was going on. Was she leaving me for sure? Was she gone for good? And it was probably a good about 2 or 3 months before she finally said, yeah, you know, I want a divorce. I want to be done. And, you know, that kind of hurt, because, you know, it was like, well, I thought that things were going better and things had gotten good, and then that happened. The entire time, I didn't take a drink. I kept going to meetings and I kept working with my sponsor. And, you know, even through that divorce, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous was there to help keep me from being me and doing the things that I do when I'm not working a program of action. So she left, and let's see, that was in 2013 when she left. I met my current wife in 2014, and at the time when I met her, things were going really well. You know, I was still going to meetings, still doing what I was supposed to be doing, still calling my sponsor, and opening up at the meetings. And, you know, my wife, my now wife, she was very happy with who I was. Come around 2015, towards the end of the year, beginning of 2015, because I had gotten out of the Air Force in 2014. They were doing a voluntary separation. So I opted to go ahead and get out of the Air Force because I wanted to be where my kids were. And I was searching for an IT job and couldn't find an IT job. And wound up losing a house that I was living in over in Hampton at the time, just because of the fact that I just could not afford to make the mortgage payments. So went through foreclosure, wound up moving down to Virginia Beach. All during that time, I was still going to meetings and still working with a sponsor. When I got to Virginia Beach, I slacked up. I still kind of, kept in contact with a sponsor. Went to a meeting every once in a while, but you know, I didn't do the things that I was supposed to be doing. And I got grumpy, and I got irritable, and I got discontented. And then at that point in time, it was, all right, well, let me pick up at my old home group, you know, because it's time to pick up a chip, you know. All right, I'm going to recommit myself to doing what I'm supposed to do, recommit myself to the program of action. And then I went back down to Virginia Beach, and I didn't do anything. And I kept doing the same thing that I was doing. It wasn't working. You know, I kept getting more irritable, more discontented. You know, by the time it got to be, 5-6 years of sobriety, some sobriety, some dry drunkenness there. I'd gotten back into, gotten a new home group, and I picked up my seven-year medallion there, and then I started going to college because I needed to do something to be able to help further my career and help my family along. And then I let that get in the way of what I was supposed to be doing, because I was going to school every Tuesday, Wednesday, on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, online, doing things, Friday night, Saturday morning, doing schoolwork. And so I go from work to school, repeat, work, school, repeat, work, school, repeat, and I kind of let AA drop off to the wayside. I go to like one meeting a week, if I was lucky, to go to one meeting a week. The sponsor that I had at the time, I didn't call him. But every once in a while, and when I did, it wasn't, hey, how you doing? I'm still here, still okay. There was no meaningful interaction. There was no, hey, let's work through the steps. There was no, hey, how are you really doing? You know, for somebody to call me out on my what's really going on with me. And you know, slowly but surely, I just kind of stopped going. I'm fine, you know. Yeah, I'm still on the Wakefield Campfire Conference Committee. I'm okay. I'm still helping out with that. So yeah, once a month for, you know, like a good 6-7 months out of the year. Yeah, I'm doing something. I'm staying connected. Yeah, connected with one meeting a month. Not really. But I will tell you, you know, that is probably the only thing that saved my life and kept me still connected to AA to this day is the fact that I was on that committee. Because had I not been on that committee, I would not have been around the people that kind of still reminded me that I was an alcoholic. And the fact that I would go to the Wakefield Campfire Conference at the end of the, you know, end of September every year and see the people that, you know, I got sober with. My sponsor, Mark, he was around when I first was getting sober. And then my second sponsor was his sponsee. And then his sponsee moved away. And then I moved to Virginia Beach and Mark moved to Virginia Beach. So God has been working in my life this entire time, keeping, you know, somebody close nearby that he knew that I needed to be able to talk to. And that I could be able to have helped me through this process, because I cannot do this alone. So last year, things got, you know, things with my wife and I got in kind of, you know, I, you know, like a good alcoholic, you know, has caused enough damage, you know, my anger building up and my explosive, you know, my explosive shouting and amongst other things that had happened at the house, where she finally said, "You are not the same guy that you were when we met." It's like, I don't know what happened, but you probably need to go back to AA because you are not that same guy anymore. I don't like this Christian that you are. Okay, well, all right, I'll go back to meetings again. I was like, all right, how do I do this? Because, you know, I'm a shy guy. I don't like getting up in front of people and talking, but when I was when I was actively drinking, I could be loud and boisterous and didn't care. But how do I go to a meeting in Virginia Beach where I don't know anybody? You know, how do I come here to this meeting and tell my story when I don't know anybody? It's and it's only by the grace of God that I can stand here today and tell my story. Because, you know, the entire way up here, I was praying, okay, God, please take away that fear from talking, because I don't like getting up in front of people. So I really didn't like, you know, having to go back and, you know, tell people, yeah, I had kind of not really been doing what I was supposed to be doing. It slacked off either. Because to me, I kind of felt embarrassed, you know, and ashamed that I had been doing that, and I didn't like those feelings. So the Wakefield Campfire Conference last year, Mark was there, and I went up to him and said, look, I need to tell him myself. And I told him what had been going on with me, and I asked him to be my sponsor, and he said, yes, I'll sponsor you. So I call him twice a week. I go to meetings with him, you know, in person on Monday at my home group, and then do a Zoom meeting on Wednesday night, which is a Rule 52 meeting, which is a great meeting. And then we go to another meeting on Thursdays together. And so I'm doing much more today than what I was in the past. And I'm happy again. You know, I wake up in the morning and I surrender every morning. Because when I wasn't surrendering and taking over, you know, my own actions every day, I know how I was. I was restless, irritable, discontent, angry. And no matter what I did, tried and pulled in any direction, all those little puppets wouldn't dance the way that I wanted them to. So I wake up in the morning today, and now I say that third step prayer every morning. And I pray for those people that, you know, that I was angry at. My ex-wife, last last September decided that she was going to leave her current husband and up and run away and go to Texas. And kids were still at my house, and now all of a sudden I went from not having my kids on a regular basis to, wow, okay, my kids are now here, and now I'm going through trying to figure out how to get, you know, child support stopped and, you know, get kids enrolled in school and, you know, deal with the aftermath of all of that. And things just didn't quite seem fair in the process of all that. You know, I'm still paying child support, and my kids were with me, and it was like, well, how do I stop this? You know, okay, go to, you know, file court hearing. Okay. Oh, well, we're going to have to continue this because she filed for a continuance. She's not here. The kids are here. Okay. What do I do? Okay, God. All right. You've got this because I don't have this. This is not in my control. Now, that those learning lessons, they only come through pain. That is the only way that I have grown in this program, is through pain, because when I'm comfortable and I'm happy and I'm not having something happen, I wound up resting on my laurels. And I'm trying to guard against that today because, wow, that is not a comfortable position to be in. A few different court dates happened. The one happened at the end of April for the child support, where the judge said, yep, I can go back to the 5th of January when the first custody order was put in. I've got, well, my oldest son, he's now 18, so he's not under the custody order anymore, but his brother is. But I've got full custody of my boys legally now. And the judge said, yep, you don't have to pay child support no more. I can only go back to, you know, back to January 5th for being able to redisperse the money, because they put a stop on sending out the money. And then, you know, for a while I was saying, okay, well, that's fine. Yeah, it kind of sucks that I've been having to pay it. And they told me I could stop in January. That money was just sitting there. It was going to come back to me. All right, that's fine. And then when the judge said, yeah, we're going to split it up between January 5th and whatever's there going forward is going to go to her, whatever's that going after is going to you. I just remember going, God, why? I don't understand. You know, I'm trying to do everything right that I'm supposed to be doing. And why is it that now all of a sudden, you know, when I'm expecting to get the money back, you know, I'm now getting told, yeah, I'm not going to wind up getting the money back. Okay, God, you got a plan. I don't know what it is. So it's in your hands. So, you know, the house that we're living in right now, our family friend is who we're renting from. We've been renting there for about the last 3.5 years now, I think. And we know she's getting ready to retire, and she wants to sell the house, and she wants to move to Texas. And when I lost the house in Hampton, I had a VA loan at the time, and I had looked up to see, you know, kind of what any sort of benefit that I did have left. And basically, I have a benefit, but I have a benefit of zero at the moment because they. Now, there was too much money owed there from the loss of the house, from the foreclosure, so I can't really get a VA loan at the moment without paying back $34,000 to them. All right, well, I guess the only way that we can try to buy this house is if we save up money. Well, how are we going to save up at least 3% to be able to get a loan when we can't even get the child support back? So, all right, God, I'm giving it to you and try to turn it over and try to just keep doing the next right thing. And then last week, whatever tax week was, on the 15th of this month, I was doing taxes and sitting there starting to work out everything. Mail comes in, look at the mail, and there's a check in there from DCSE, and it had all the $2,100 that I was not expecting to get back in that check. And I was like, oh, cow. God, thank you so much, because that was not something I was expecting. I looked at what the statement said, and I was like, yep, going all the way back to October 22nd. Wow. That's a miracle, because that was not something that I could have caused to happen at all. Only God could have done that. I did the taxes, and we wound up getting like $8,000 back in taxes. In total, in a matter of a day, we wound up going from only having $2,000 available to having $12,000 that we're going to be able to use towards getting the house. It's amazing the miracles that happen when I turn my life over to God. Because there is no human way possible that I could have come up with that sort of money if it wasn't for him. And there's no way that that would have happened if it weren't for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because if I was drinking, why bother? You know, why would I care whether or not I could try to keep a house over my family's head? I ran up, you know, 18 grand in credit card debt when I was drinking, and I'd pay my bills just so that I could, you know, go back and use those cards again to be able to drink. You know, today I've got all those bills paid off. You know, I made those financial amends the way that they needed to be made because that was the right thing to do. It was what I needed to do to make things right. Because if I can't clean up my side of the street, then I'm not going to be able to stay sober. And you know, I wish that I could say that I had a whole lot more, guys, to talk about. I know that you guys kind of go through a reading really quick. You want to give the speaker as much time, but I kind of don't have a whole lot more at this point in time. That is where I'm at with my life today. I'm very grateful to be here. I'm very grateful to be sober. If you have not tried this way of life, I suggest giving it a try. Thanks for letting me speak.
Thank you very much, Kristen, for sharing your experience, strength, and hope with us tonight.
That was fantastic.